Hello and welcome to Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for tuning in with us here at the 4 o'clock hour. If you're a 9 to 5 for 53 minutes, 40 seconds until you hit the finish line. But I appreciate so much tuning in with us here on this week's version of Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial, as we take a look at all things economic, financial, perhaps things which are a part of your particular financial experience or family members, colleagues, hopefully some topics and the kinds of strategies that would be helpful to you as you make your decisions and you walk your financial path. However, you know as a previous listener to Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial, that all things that we're talking about here are not intended as specific recommendations for you, meaning that even though we're talking on these subjects and we're giving attention to sometimes very specific investments, we're looking at them in, sometimes in a positive light, sometimes in a negative light. We do that here on the show. But in doing so, again, remember that nothing is intended as a specific recommendation for you. We strongly, strongly recommend that you reach out to your tax advisor or to your financial advisor, or if you'd like to reach out to us at North Main Financial Group, love to hear from you, love to chat about your particular financial situation and to see if there are ways in which we might be able to be helpful to you. Online, you can find us at northmainfinancial.com. That's north like the direction, main like the street, financial.com, northmainfinancial.com. We have a contact page on there. Go ahead and leave us an email address or a phone number, again, at northmainfinancial.com. Again, folks, thank you so much for tuning in to Dollars and Cents here. We're going to get right into it. First top, the first big item that we've really adopted at the front end of each Dollars and Cents show is what is hot or what's hot. And you like that? Hey, producer Bill, he's always right on it. He's got the flames going. There probably are even flame emojis around me right now. I don't even know it. That's because we're lit, as in L-I-T lit, right? That's what I'm supposed to say to appeal to folks who are roughly half my age and younger, which you're just starting to do the math in your head, aren't you, about how old I am? Don't worry about that. All right, we are talking about what's hot here on Dollars and Cents. Let's go ahead and get into it. Some of the things that are probably hitting your headlines. And we're going to provide some anecdotal sort of things as well. We're getting into March Madness. If you like college basketball, we're into conference tournament time, and very soon we're going to have the top six. It's 66 now, right? I always say 64, producer Bill, but
Right, yes, because they have those playing games.
The play-in games, right? So
did not think about that, yeah.
So we're not even just the 64. We have the play-in games now for the bottom two or four teams or so to be able to get in there. But eventually we'll get the 64 and begin the madness when it comes to big-time college basketball. So we'll probably talk, couple, three, four, five, 15 minutes on that kind of stuff as well. But let's go ahead and get into it. What's hot? This was actually an article, and I talked about this actually on a different kind of platform, talking about this earlier this week. And this was in the Wall Street Journal. And it was talking about using 401ks as cash machines. And I'm using literally the verbiage out of the Wall Street Journal. But it remarked on the concerning note that we have seen here in this past year, 2023, and this was done by Vanguard, by the way. So it was reported in the Wall Street Journal. Study was done by Vanguard Funds, mutual fund, a huge mutual fund company, largest in the world, based out of Eastern Pennsylvania. And the study had to do with the concerning trend of the number of early withdrawals or hardship withdrawals done from 401k plans. Now, Vanguard is not the only provider of 401k plans. They are one of the largest providers of 401k plans in the country. You may have a 401k plan that is managed by Vanguard or has Vanguard funds inside of it. So there are obviously plans, many plans outside of Vanguard. Vanguard just happens to be one of the largest providers out there. And it was talking about among the plans that Vanguard manages. So this is not for all plans, but they manage over, I think, roughly 5,000, a little over 5,000 plans, or there were 5,000 plans who were part of this study. Maybe let me say it that way. And then looking at the number of early withdrawals, and it was a disturbing trend. So let's look at it in terms of percentages, and the number of early withdrawals due to hardship doubled in the last 5 years. And when I say doubled, we're going to take this in context here in just a minute, but it's the amount of growth or the growth in that percentage that was, I think, really the point of concern relative to the data analytic that was brought out in the Wall Street Journal article. In looking at the number of folks who have taken early withdrawals, hardship withdrawals out of 401ks. Now, again, to put it in context, so I've given you that. So now you're thinking, okay, big number, it's doubled here over the last couple of years. We're not talking about a huge number of folks. So out of all the participants that were a part of this analytic, before the pandemic, before pre-COVID, 1.8%, roughly speaking, of plan participants taking hardship withdrawals, up to about 3.6% now. And that's why there was the doubling figure. But we're not talking about 50% of folks who are taking hardship withdrawals, nothing along those lines. But still, not the kind of trend that you would want to have, you know, because generally speaking, the reason why folks are taking hardship withdrawals is because they have no other source of capital or no other source to be able to access to be able to address the reason for the withdrawal from the retirement plan. Because remember, and I'm not going to get too granular with this, but it is important to remember that generally speaking, taking an early withdrawal from a 401k or any other retirement plan is very expensive tax-wise. Let me just call it this way. If you are under the age of 59 and a half and you are taking an early withdrawal for non-hardship reasons, let's say you're buying a house, buying a car, doing other kinds of things like that, you are under the age of 59 and a half and taking from a pre-tax retirement account, generally speaking, you're going to go income tax on the entire amount that you withdraw plus a 10% excise tax imposed by the IRS. That's true whether you're at Vanguard, Fidelity, any of the other Capital Group, any of the other large 401k or any other 401k or pre-tax retirement plan providers. So it's not specific just to one provider or one investment company or anything like that. So very, very important to keep that in mind. It's expensive from a tax standpoint to be able to access funds, especially if you are younger than age 59 and a half. And if you're thinking, well, what does age 59 and a half have to do with it? That is the not so magic number age-wise that the IRS has designated that if you're older than age 59 and a half, you're not subject to an early withdrawal penalty. But if you're under that, you are. And so that's very, very important unless you fall into one of these hardship exceptions. And with the hardship exception, say that five times fast, probably not on live radio should you do that. But in one of those hardship kind of scenarios, you're not exempt from income tax. You're just exempt from the 10% excise tax, that extra 10%. So it's still taxable to you from an income tax standpoint. So if you qualify among the IRS definitions to be able to take that hardship withdrawal, whether it be for tuition, if it is for first-time home purchase, if it is for medical bills, or those kinds for funeral expenses, if it's for those kinds of exceptions that the IRS has specifically outlined and it's approved in that way, you don't get exempt from income tax. You just get exempt from that extra 10% penalty. So it's very, very important to keep in mind, very important when you're taking a look at that, and very important when we're looking at it in a macro sense relative to this study about the fact that, again, we've doubled here over the last 5 years. Now, is this kind of trend going to continue? Don't know. But it certainly is a concerning trend relative to the number of other things that we see in the macro landscape with regards to the consumer. You know, with the consumer, a consumer, roughly 75% of our GDP, meaning we are a spending economy. We grow based upon the spending habits of the consumer, generally speaking. That is an alarming point. We've got federal student loans, which came online here from a payment standpoint last fall. We've got credit card debt up over $1.1 trillion now. There are a number of, let's call them financial weights on the consumer. And as we're looking at that and then looking at the increase in the number of withdrawals that have happened now, early withdrawals now that have come out of 401k plans, you wonder if those two might be at least in some way correlated. I don't want to draw a tight correlation, but I definitely want to keep that kind of thought process in mind, especially as we're taking a look at the consumer. Big deal. Consumer, big deal with regards to our GDP. Well, friends, we're going to take a break here on WSIC as we hear from our sponsors. You're listening to Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial here on WSIC. Hello and welcome back to Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for hanging with us into the second quarter football reference here on Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. I mean, producer Bill, I mean, we are 1 week closer since the last time that I was on this microphone to the start of training camp for the football season. That doesn't mean it's necessarily close because we are, yes, in the second week of March.
Correct.
However, we are 1 week closer.
Yeah, I got no problem getting excited.
I may or may not be bringing this up every single week until the start of football camp.
I'm here for it.
Just to make folks
build
aware.
The buzz, yeah.
Build the buzz. I like it. Now, in saying that, I do have to say about our Carolina Panthers. as we start here in the second quarter of today's show, that we may have made a move relative to our defensive personnel with regards to Brian Burns.
Yeah, I'm numb to all of this. Okay. At this point,
I'll admit, and this is just my commentary, all subjective, nothing objective in this particular thought. Man, I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I am kind of speechless about it. I mean, I'm trying to fill the air appropriately.
The bright lights just keep disappearing and disappearing and disappearing. Soon it's just darkness.
It's just darkness. Yeah. And it's just silence.
Yeah.
And we don't, if you're a Carolina Panthers fan here, I mean, yeah, and we hear the Carolina Panthers here on WSIC as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, we're huge fans here.
Oh, we'll be here.
Well, I mean, we're not going anywhere. I mean, this is, no way. We've come this far.
Exactly.
We're riding this bus right. At this point.
I'm stuck in the mud.
But man, a lot. I mean, oh gosh. Okay. We're just, you know, that's, yeah, like you said, you're just numb. You just,
right.
You know, sometimes
just take it on the chin, keep on going.
Late rounds. Exactly.
Right.
Late rounds.
Exactly. We'll hit on something.
We will. Because you've been hit so many times in the chin, at a certain point, you just get a little spacey, a little punchy, and you just roll.
Right.
You just keep rolling. Man, a lot. I tell you, if you're a fan right now, like we are here, I mean, these are only the fans are left because there's no bandwagon. There's no wagon.
There's just
us crazy saying, it's going to be better tomorrow, I promise.
That's it.
Anyhow. All right. Well, we'll stay with it certainly here at WSIC, but I appreciate so much hanging with us here into the second quarter here on Dollars and Cents. We're going to keep going with what's hot. I'm going to shift up a little bit, going to go a little anecdotal on you. We got into the granular there talking about 401ks and early withdrawals, and I would call it a disturbing trend. And I don't say that because it's been unnaturally long, but it was for all of 2023. Comparing it to 2019 in terms of early withdrawals from 401ks, a doubling of that. Not huge in terms of the number of folks who are doing it. However, when you're talking about a doubling of the percentage, still is a doubling of the percentage. Still something we're going to keep on our radar screen. You heard me say right before we went to break there, it's big. I mean, it's big because the consumer is approximately 3/4 of our overall economy. When the consumer slows down, we economically slow down. So we're going to watch it very closely as the months continue to progress here. All right, we're going to shift up a little bit. We're getting warm weather here, spring, right? I mean, we're in the mid-70s today here. I love it. I do. I'm not even going to pretend to call it anything other than that. Sun's out, blue skies, Carolina blue, by the way, for all you Duke fans. It's Carolina blue. Just want you to be aware of that in looking at that sky. But we're talking about grilling. Okay, so outdoor grilling. All right. Yeah, here for a couple of moments. You may say, what does that have to do with anything financial? We'll get to it here. Hold on for a minute. Start out with a data point. Over 90% of homeowners, over 9 out of every 10, over 9 out of every 10 homeowners has an outdoor cooking device. So now it's not, we're not just calling it a grill. And I am by no means an expert. So
yes, I see. Thank you for calling.
In what we're talking about here, because I am not a grill expert. But there are so many things other than grills that you can have now in terms of outdoor cooking devices. I mean, I do have a grill, but that's, I mean, great. we got things like smokers and green eggs, and I mean, you probably are much more of an expert than I am. But anyhow, I'm saying that because there's now a push for more women to be involved with grilling, and I say that not because like I said in any way that I'm an expert on grilling, but folks like Martha Stewart, Gabby Dalkin, and you probably know who Gabby Dalkin is, and I mean this with no disrespect to Ms. Dalkin, but she has a million followers on Instagram. I don't know a whole lot about IG, but I do know that having a million followers on Instagram is a big deal. So Martha Stewart, that's a name that I know. That's more from my generation. But they're really making a push. They have blogs and they have other kinds of media outlets pushing more women to get involved with grilling, which I think is a great idea. Absolutely. But I guess I wasn't aware, and this is now showing my ignorance. I wasn't aware that it was such a male-dominated kind of thing, that it was more women inside and men outside, I guess. And maybe we just like things. Maybe it is that primal. We just like fire and things outside. I don't know. It might be something like that. But anyhow, kind of interesting when you look at it anecdotally, when you're looking at that kind of thing, because the grilling experience, the outdoor eating experience, especially when we're talking about home, huge. I mean, if we're talking about over 9 out of every 10 homeowners that actually has an outdoor cooking device, we're using them a lot. So it's a very big push. So whenever you walk into a Lowe's or a Home Depot and it's about this time of the year and you see basically the whole front end of the store filled up with various outdoor cooking devices, there's a reason why. And it's because there's a huge market out there, and to get a little bit more of it would certainly be advantageous from a business standpoint. So that's why we're seeing it. Very interesting kind of thing. All right, we're going to keep going along the warm weather line of things. I guess you can do this, what I'm going to say next, when it's not warm outside. But Producer Bill, are you a cruiser? I think I've asked you this previously on a previous show. Man, when I say cruiser, I'm looking at large ships, large collections of persons on the water. Are you a cruiser? Are you one who takes cruises or desires to take cruises with any regularity?
I don't have a desire. Okay. I would like to do it.
Okay.
I'm open-minded, but I also, just being on that ship, once you're on the ship, you know, yes. I feel like that's the exciting part, is like getting the ship, and then once you're on there, you're you're on that ship.
You're saying the view as you pull away from port maybe doesn't change a whole lot.
Right.
It's right. Completely respect and understand.
Right.
And then there are folks who are probably among the listening audience here on Dollars and Cents. I'm sure there are folks who, and I know folks who go on cruises several times a year. And there are other folks, probably more like me and Producer Bill, like, okay, yep, if it was there, okay, and if not, that's okay too. But anyhow, the reason why I'm talking about it is there are the several largest lines are all publicly traded companies. So when we're looking at Royal Caribbean, we're looking at Carnival Cruise Lines, looking at Norwegian Cruise Lines, again, not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold any of those three companies, but taking a look at them because, again, coming back to the consumer, especially when it describes, or when we're describing rather, looking at the expenditure of discretionary dollars, it's one of the big places to look because you're talking about a big spend. I mean, there aren't too many. I remember when I was growing up, and this is not that I went on one, but I remember, I think it was Carnival Cruise Lines. Bill, this is probably after your time. There were Carnival Cruise Lines for a while there. It was off season, and I'm not even sure it ever even left port, but you could go on a 3-day cruise. The total cost was $199. And
could get behind something
like that. It's been a while since that happened. But I want to say it was $199 for a 3-day cruise. And again, I'm not saying it was a good or not so good time. I didn't actually take advantage of that. But I remember that not true anymore, at least not that I've seen. And I'm not a cruise expert in any way. But boy, I look at some of these cruise costs. Disney cruise costs or some. I mean, we're talking about thousands of dollars per person for these kinds of things. But interestingly enough, from a volume standpoint, in terms of the number of folks who are reserving, and this is really the crux of these data points or these analytics that we reviewed here recently, the volume rebound since COVID has been incredible. Meaning the number of folks desiring to go on cruises to the extent that the cruise lines are actually being even much more proactive in saying to folks, I mean, for the obvious reasons, yes, it's good for business, but saying, if you don't reserve early, you're not going to be able to reserve at all. Very interesting for each and for all three. So you get different experiences, is my understanding, across the cruise lines. You have some that are, let's say, a little bit more reserved, a little bit more formal. You have some which are a little bit more for the younger crowd, maybe a little bit more of a party kind of atmosphere on there, all across the board. Really seeing this, especially from the big three that I mentioned, Royal Caribbean, Carnival Cruise Lines, and Norwegian, that do the most volume in terms of the number of folks. As a matter of fact, we were talking about this Icon of the Seas. Which one is that?
Yes.
Is that Royal Caribbean?
I do forget.
I want to say it's Royal.
Yes.
And I'm not certain about that, but
yeah.
Icon of the Seas, and we looked at this. It's 7,000 people.
Huge.
I mean, unreal. I mean, I don't like being around 7 people, let alone 7,000 people. I mean, obviously, I mean, you all got your own rooms and things like that. But holy mackerel.
Yeah, that's a...
it's a floating city.
A handful. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's a floating city. It's amazing, these kinds of things out there. Anyhow, so obviously some significant demand on that end of things. And there's been an increase in the emphasis on excursions and the drink packages where you could pay a fixed price and drink as much alcohol as you like. On there. And so you would think that this would be, you know, very, very positive relative to these companies. The challenge has been that for the big three that I mentioned specifically, and I know these three because they're publicly traded, so all of their data points are publicly known and reviewable and able to be studied, that you would think, boy, this must mean great things for these cruise lines. And I would say from a revenue top-line standpoint, yes. But the challenge with the margins or the challenge with the profit is that these all three took on some significant debt. And by significant, I mean billions with a B during the time of COVID, meaning that in order to be able to, no pun intended, float through that time and then be able to, like Royal just did here, to launch new ships that are available for the opportunity to rent and for those kinds of things, it's a huge expense for the understandable reasons. I mean, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to operate these ships for a given cruise season. And so they took on a lot of debt. And so it's been a very big challenge for these groups, for these, especially the big three, the publicly traded ones, to be able to get back to significant profit margin. And there were just several different data points there talking about that, that even with the increase in revenue, it's still been very hard to be able to get back to significant profit. So they're emphasizing things that are higher in terms of margin. And that's understandable. Most businesses do that, right? They're going to emphasize things. I mean, it's like a grocery store, right? They want you to buy the candy bar and the magazine at the front end. And if you don't buy the gallon of milk, that's fine because they're not making much money on that anyhow. So similar kinds of things, just a much larger expense. So very, very interesting to see those kinds of things. We're going to be watching it because, again, it speaks to the consumer. Thank you so much for hanging with us here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. Back soon here on WSIC. Hello and welcome back to Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for hanging with us. Second half of today's show. We're on the sprint here. I mean, we just came under 26 seconds if you're a 9-to-5er, so we're 25 minutes, 52 seconds until we get to the finish line. Great stuff. Thank you so much for hanging with us as you're making your way towards the end of your day here, as we're giving attention to all things economic and financial here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. If you'd like to give us a call in the studio, I didn't mention this earlier. Sometimes I get real excited. I mean, we're talking about things like grilling and cruise lines here just before we went to break. But if you'd like to give us a call in the studio, 844-STUDIO-4, that's 844-788-3464, 844-788-3464 here in the studio. Can't promise we're going to get to your topic. And as you know, I cannot give specific financial recommendations or advice, but I can talk in general ways, especially if there are things that are hitting your radar screen or perhaps things that are high on your financial priority page, if you will, looking at the kinds of things that are out there right now. And you may just say, you know, what do you think about this? Or, you know, is this the kind of thing that's important, not important? Or what are folks thinking about it? Always happy to hear from you, because we always want to be relevant here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. Now I'm going to give you a little anecdotal, just a data point. Well, data point, let's call it trivia. I can't even call it data point. So on this date, 1821, all right, on this date in 1821, took this right from the Wall Street Journal, as they reported as well. But on this date in 1821, the market opened, stock market opened, meaning the New York Stock Exchange, and exactly zero shares traded the entire day. Meaning there was not one share traded on the stock exchange for the entire day on this date. I guess, was it just the flu going around, or I don't know. I mean, that's... I mean, was it pollen? Could have been pollen.
Right.
Right? I mean, allergies.
Yes, it would be that peak season.
Yeah. Which makes sense. I mean, right. 1821, they were probably doing a fair amount of trading outside underneath the oak tree at that time. So, I mean, I can see it, right? I mean, that's, you know, just, or maybe there was a holiday.
But I did not know that.
Yeah, not a single share traded. Now, on the other side of things, just for perspective, average daily volume on the New York Stock Exchange, let's say roughly, so because I'm going to round here. Average daily volume on the New York Stock Exchange. Any thoughts on that, producer Bill?
Really big number.
Really big number. You're exactly right. 1.2 billion shares per day. And that's just the New York Stock Exchange. Hmm. We've got several different exchanges. Most of the shares, by the way, sidebar, if you happen to be thinking about that, most of the shares, meaning north of 85% of all shares traded in a given day electronically by folks who are not standing on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. It's kind of interesting, right? Because you think of the New York Stock Exchange, you think of guys in these jackets a little bit, you know, raising up little pieces of paper and buy. And so if you actually go to the New York Stock Exchange, it's pretty orderly.
Right.
There's not, I mean, it's a bustle.
Times are changing, right.
They are, but almost all of it digital when you're looking at that kind of thing. So not one share trade, kind of interesting whenever you're looking at it. All right, pivot. We're going to keep with the... Oh, let me. Is this me trying to be trendy? No, it's not going to happen. I mean, if you know anything about me, I'm whatever's the opposite of trendy. But I'm going to talk about TikTok. Now, I'm going to talk about TikTok, not because either I have an account on TikTok or at a pretty high level, that I have any idea how TikTok works, except that I know that you can post pictures and videos and other kinds of things.
You're on it.
Right. Okay. So I mean, it's Instagram Plus. Is that fair?
Sure. Yeah, I'm going to give it to you.
That's what an old guy would say? Okay. Right. All right. Thank you. I appreciate
it. Me pretending to be cool and like I use, yeah, sure. Yeah, I guess you can call it that. I don't know.
Well, until somebody calls in here to the studio and corrects me, I'm going to keep going with this idea. But anyhow, TikTok's been in the news. And they've been in the news, to be fair. It didn't just happen, or not that they were not in the news previously. But they've hit the radar screen of the business universe here, primarily because of movement by Congress, specifically the House of Representatives, which passed the resolution. Now, to be fair with what I'm going to say next, probably not going to pass the Senate. So I don't know that this is going to become law. Don't know at this point. But there was a resolution passed by the House of Representatives essentially to force the parent company of TikTok, not publicly traded, by the way, a group called ByteDance, based in China, BYTE, by the way, BYTE Dance, based in China, actually owns TikTok, to sell basically the U.S. assets, meaning that they sell the functionality of TikTok here in the U.S. to someone else. Now, they didn't specifically say in the resolution, at least not the parts that I read, that it had to go to a U.S. company, which I thought was interesting. Basically, it was just that the Chinese company had to sell it if they were going to allow it, or there was a threat of banning it here in the U.S. Now, what really makes that interesting, I think, there are, Producer Bill, I'm going to put you on the spot again just to give me a number, and you can say the same answer you said last time, and you'd be correct. Number of average daily users for TikTok here in the U.S., not around the world, just here in the U.S., average daily users, meaning how many folks are using TikTok?
I am going to take a shot in the dark.
Fire. Yeah.
100 million?
See, that is a great number, more than that. 170 million average daily users.
Mm.
I mean, that's a lot.
Yes.
I'm not sure there are 170 million folks here in this country who get out of bed each day. I'm not kidding, and I'm not talking because they're not feeling well. I mean, I'm not getting up today. I mean, that just blew me away.
Right.
I mean, so we're talking literally half of the population of this country, literally, is using TikTok on a daily basis. I mean, it makes me feel good because there are a lot of folks then that don't use it like me. So I'm not.
Right. Yeah. I wish I was up on it. I'm in the same boat as you.
I'm not as much of just an outcast and a curmudgeon as I am.
You're amongst friends.
but very interesting. So 170 million daily users for TikTok. And what makes this kind of, again, obviously the huge penetration from an economic standpoint here in the U.S., And so we're talking, and there are folks, I'm way outside of my expertise level here, but there are folks, a significant number of folks who utilize TikTok from a commercial standpoint, have businesses. So they are influencers using TikTok to generate revenue. So they're paid by their TikTok presence. And again, whatever's the opposite of an expert is where I am here. I'm really talking about this because of just how pervasive it is here economically. And there is some significant pushback, meaning that there is, let's call them lobbyist style groups now that have come up and said, you can't do this. We're going to be out of business. Whoever we are, I don't know who we are, but we, the folks who have an economic engine through TikTok, would obviously be very adversely affected. Very interesting to me. Very, very interesting. Very interesting that the House took that kind of move. Again, as I mentioned at the front end, not sure that it's going to pass the Senate. The tea leaves at this point indicate probably not going to pass the Senate at this point, which means it won't become law. But the fact that it got through the House, and this has been a discussion point for some time, primarily because of the concern that ByteDance is the parent company of TikTok, and this is true for most companies in China, can be manipulated to be able to distribute data about its users to the Chinese government. That's really what the concern is. So security kinds of concerns, privacy kinds of concerns, which is always interesting to me, sidebar, always interesting to me because nobody is forced to use TikTok. You only use TikTok on a voluntary basis. Very interesting to me. So anyhow, sidebar, another whole discussion point, probably a whole show in and of itself. May have to get the legal in. Probably have to bring the Chief Justin in on that, right? I mean, we're going to have to bring him in here so that he can tell me what the legal aspects are. I just find it interesting that there's so much concern when folks can voluntarily share or not share. Anyhow, sidebar. But very interesting. And actually, there was a group that came up, and this just literally hit the headlines as of the time of this live broadcast, or if you're listening to this podcast as of the time of this recording, that there's actually a buyer group that's out there right now of some significance saying, boy, if they have to sell it, we're interested in buying it. And it's actually, the group is the same group that we were talking about here during last week's show. That was coming up and is going to be, I think that it's already been closed, has bought or made a significant investment in New York Community Bank, the New York bank that we talked about last week on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial, talking about New York real estate and the bank that's really not doing all that great right now. But Steven Mnuchin, past Secretary of the Treasury, and his group, he's now in private equity, in private business, but his group made a significant billion-dollar investment in New York Community Bank. Now, literally, just scraped across the headlines, his group's now interested in buying TikTok. Very interesting to me. Very, very interesting. Because this is not casual. These are folks with billions with a B in terms of the number of dollars involved, interested in buying it. So you got to think, well, there must be some kind of economic model here that makes sense. So just kind of interesting. TikTok, again, I'm bringing it up, not a publicly traded company, but bringing them up primarily because of just how huge, like I said, when I saw the user base at 170 million folks here in the U.S. on a daily basis, thought that was huge. It really is. So, all right, just very interesting. And I want to say this just before we go to break here. Shifting gears a little bit, talking about the proposal by Nippon Steel to buy U.S. Steel, talking about security-related kinds of things and those kinds of things from an antitrust standpoint, which are out there, getting some challenges. And we said that whenever it was announced here on Dollars and Cents, we said, you know, this is going to have a pretty tall hill to climb. And we're starting to see that. So there is some speculation, especially because of another group here in the U.S. called Cleveland Cliffs, maybe wanting to make a move, maybe wanting to make a bid in on U.S. Steel as well, that it may or may not go through, meaning that Nippon may not be able to close on their deal to buy U.S. Steel. And we're talking a $14 billion deal. So we're talking about a big deal from a dollar standpoint, but very interesting to see that kind of thing because, again, there's concern about security. There's concern about also, you know, should U.S. Steel continue to be U.S. Steel, all of those kinds of things. So very interesting, always dynamic here on Dollars and Cents, talking about what's happening in the economic world around us. Well, I'm going to take a deep breath as we take a couple seconds here to hear from our sponsors. Thank you so much for listening to us here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial, back in a few minutes. Hello and welcome back to Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for hanging with us. Fourth quarter of today's show, football reference. We're getting closer. Every time I'm on the microphone, every week, we're a week closer to training camp and the start of football season. I know, if you're a baseball fan, we're like, we're in the middle of baseball season. Well, we're not quite in the middle of it, but we're getting ready to get in the middle of baseball season here. And if you're a basketball or hockey fan, you're like, well, we're literally in the middle of the season here. But yes, we acknowledge all of those, and we enjoy all of them as well. I just like to make sure you're paying attention here. But thanks so much for hanging with us into the fourth quarter here. We're going to get in real quickly to the segment of what to know. And when we say what to know, it usually is a financial economic concept, talking about some things that are more in our end of the universe at North Main Financial Group, a little bit more basic, but maybe the kinds of things that, well, maybe we've heard of this a lot, but we really don't know what it is, or maybe some more details about it. That's why we spend some time on it. Again, not because we have any kind of higher knowledge or anything like that, but sometimes we blush through concepts that because we use them so much, we make assumptions about what other folks know, and that's, yeah, we don't like to do that. So we slow down a little bit here on what to know in talking about, again, some of the financial terms that you may hear, and you may know a little bit about it, but maybe you'd be interested in some additional details. So we're going to talk about a barrel of oil. Now, when we talk about a barrel of oil, yes, you're thinking 55-gallon drum kind of thing, steel drum, and then, yes, that is indeed the metric in most instances that is used as a barrel of oil. And what we're talking about here, we're talking about the pricing of a barrel of oil, the impact of the pricing of a barrel of oil, and what it means. Gee, why does it matter? Well, you may say that it doesn't matter. I'm going to offer up a couple of things here. You may say, oh, actually, it does matter at some level here. But a barrel of oil is a commodity, meaning that it is something that is actively traded. There is a widespread market, literally an international market. There are two primary measures or two primary products which are used for measuring where the price of oil is in our trading spaces. There are many more oil derivatives. We're not going to get into them here in terms of oil products and byproducts, but we're going to talk about two big ones right here. The most liquid, no pun intended, and then most frequently traded, West Texas Intermediate, WTI, priced out of Cushing, Oklahoma. If you don't know Cushing, Oklahoma, entirely understandable. That happens to be where the most oft-quoted price for West Texas Intermediate, WTI, sometimes called sweet crude, meaning that it is one of the more purified elements of crude oil, which is drawn out of the ground. The second one, international, priced most commonly in terms of the pricing point in London, in the UK, Brent Sea crude, or Brent or crude, which is pulled from mostly international waters coming off of oil derricks, then being priced then at a spot in London, in the UK. So when we're looking at those kinds of things, those are the prices which are most often quoted. And usually there's some differential because A, they're different oil products. I'm not going to get into the granular, no pun intended, aspect of what the difference is between West Texas Intermediate and Brent C, but they are different products. And then also because of the transportation element, meaning there is a differential in the transportation element for most West Texas crude. Think about it. If it's West Texas going to Cushing, Oklahoma, not as big of a deal as saying pulling oil out of an oil derrick in the middle of, say, the Brent Sea and then pricing it in London, the UK. Just a little anecdotal point there. So you're going to get a little bit of a price differential. Generally speaking, they're going to be in the same range, but it's going to be different. So right now, you're looking at the price of a barrel of oil of West Texas Intermediate, low to mid-70s in terms of 70, meaning low to mid-$70 per barrel right now. Brent, low 80s. Right now, I would say it's about 82, 3 right now is the pricing on a barrel of Brent C crude. And so we say that, okay, so now you know it's a barrel. By the way, when we're talking about trading barrels of oil, over 95% of traders never take delivery. Say that again. Over 95% of traders never take delivery of trading a barrel of oil, meaning that even though they might be buying and selling either the barrels themselves or derivative contracts, futures, options, etc., on the price of a barrel of oil, over 95% never take delivery, meaning that they're not actually receiving a barrel of oil, even when they buy it, meaning they're going to be buying it and selling it so quickly that, or they're buying options contracts or futures contracts where there is no physical delivery in that instance because it is a derivative or a financial instrument that they don't actually take actual possession of. Now, some do. Some actually take possession of it. They store it. You got to pay for storage, obviously, of a physical commodity, but over 95% do not do that. So just important to know. Now, you may say, okay, well, now we know what a barrel of oil is. Now we know that most folks are trading it and they're not actually taking delivery of it. Okay, what's that matter to me? Well, you probably do know that there is not a direct correlation, but there is a correlation between the price of a barrel of oil and the price of gasoline at the gas pump. And that absolutely impacts all of us in some way. Now, it's not true that because the price of a barrel of oil increases, that the price of a gallon of gasoline at the gas pump increases. And there is definitely not a one-to-one correlation, meaning that if the price of a barrel of oil goes up 10%, that it goes up 10% at the gas pump. However, there is some correlation between those two. That's why it's important to at least have an awareness of what the price of a barrel of oil is, i.e., I told you with West Texas Intermediate here in the U.S., you know, if it's in the low to mid-70s, if it goes up, say, to low to mid-90s, that's a pretty significant move. That's, let's say, 20% or more in terms of a movement. Then it's possible there's going to be an increase in the price of gasoline at the gas pump, and that affects all of us. So very important to keep that in mind. Again, there's not a one-to-one correlation because the oil that's pulled out of the ground is, of course, in no way what actually goes into your vehicle. There's a refinement process that goes into it. Not only does it produce gasoline, but it produces diesel fuel. It produces other oil and petroleum-based products. For example, the plastic in your milk jugs, you're going to have some level of oil. You're going to have some oil in terms of the production of polyester, so clothing. I mean, lots of derivatives that come out of it. So it's not just a correlation between what is the oil product being pulled from the ground and then what goes into your car. But it's important enough, and there is enough correlation that it's important to keep it in mind. So here on What to Know, barrel of oil, again, two primary ones, West Texas Intermediate, Cushing, Oklahoma, Brent Seed crude priced in London in the UK. And again, important because there is some correlation, not direct, but there is some correlation between where those prices are and what the price of a gallon of gasoline is that goes into your vehicle. So important to keep it in mind, important to be aware of it. And also important to know that most folks, when they're buying and trading, when you have traders of those kinds of commodities, are not in any way actually taking possession of a barrel of oil. They're not storing it in their garage or putting it in the trunk of their car or anything like that, for the most part. All right, let's keep going here. Just a kind of an anecdotal item. Interesting. I've seen this study now a couple of different times, and we've even talked about it here on previous shows here on Dollars and Cents. And this is a macro, and I say it's a macro because it's a national kind of data collection, national kind of data points here when we're looking at it. I'm just going to throw out the data point, and then you can think on it. I'm going to provide some follow-up and commentary to it. But here's where the data are. Nearly half, so here's we're shifting gears. We're going straight from a barrel of oil into where kids get their finances. Here, nearly half of kids who are over the age of 18 receive non-college continuous financial support from parents or guardians. I'm going to say that again. Nearly half of kids who are age 18 and older receive non-college continuous financial support from parents or guardians. Now, so what's that say? So we're not talking about paying for tuition. We're not talking about paying for room and board if you're at college or anything like that. So we're talking about literally help for kids who are either living on their own or have a job, or let's say they may have even moved out and have moved back in, but nearly half of kids over the age of 18 are receiving some kind of continuous financial support. And this particular data collection here, this is actually from savings.com. They did the survey, and the average amount of support, almost $1,400 per month. This is a significant collection of data. Meaning looking at what this means as far, again, coming back to the consumer, when we're looking at where folks are feeling the strain from a financial standpoint. So if we're talking about half of kids who are age 18 and older receiving on average $1,400 or approximately $1,400 of financial support on a monthly basis, we're talking about big numbers. And there are impact points here. I can't think of too many positive. I can think of several negative that with regards to our overall expenditure. So why the support? Well, it may be for housing, meaning they may have moved back in with guardians or with parents because too expensive relative to their ability to earn or what they are earning. Remember, I'm not talking about folks who are at college. I'm not talking about folks who are into the university experience or away at school or anything like that. I'm talking about folks who are not in that space. And I'm not just talking about folks between the ages of 18 and 22. I'm talking about just over the age of 18. So we're talking about could be in their 40s kind of thing. And it's continuous. So it's not a gift. It's not a one-timer. It's not birthday, Christmas kind of things. None of those kind of things. This is continuous and ongoing financial support. So it could be they move back in with parents or with guardians. Could be that they're receiving just some direct financial help to pay rent, to pay a mortgage because what they're earning is not sufficient enough. Cell phones, health insurance, auto expenses, auto insurance, car payments, those kinds of things to be able to float, if you will, to be able to make ends meet. And so there are a whole lot of commentary points that you can spin from that. I don't want to get too carried away with this because you can make a lot of supposition into that kind of space. But there are some, let's call them direct sort of things that we can glean from what we're talking about here. Again, half of kids over the age of 18 receiving, who are not, meaning in a non-college experience, not for college, not for university, who are receiving continuous financial support. One of the things that's very true is that it's impacting the parents or the guardians in terms of their financial space. So whether it's with regards to immediate things like cash flow on a monthly basis, meaning if they're giving $1,400 a month to kids, they're not using it for themselves. They're not saving it for the long term. Perhaps they're tapping into retirement accounts earlier or in greater ways than they would have on their own. So very significant in terms of the kinds of economic impacts that means. And you may say, well, they're spending it, so it's still good for the economy. You can make an argument. I'll give you that. They're not spending it on themselves. They're spending it beyond the space which would be most customary for the support of children. And you know, is that good from a long-term economic and financial standpoint for us as a country? Don't know. I really don't. But it was very interesting to me, I think, because of how many folks are subject to that, or how many folks are in that kind of space where they need to be supported beyond the normal child-rearing years. And I think because then you add the medical expense possibilities for aging parents, That's a lot of strain from a financial standpoint. Well, friends, we're rapidly approaching the end of our time together here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. I appreciate so much you hanging with us here on this week's version. Be sure to tune in next week as we're talking on all things economic and financial, again, here on Dollars and Cents at WSIC.
Serving you better than ever before. WSIC, Statesville. W290DK, Mooresville. W264CU, Statesville.